broadcast. Till next time, stay strong and pay close attention.
From Pacifico Radio, this is Democracy Now!
I think at stake is the whole future of the media in this country. Radio, television, cable, the internet. What kind of programming the American people see. Their entertainment, their information, political dialogue.
Dissident FCC Commissioner Michael Copps calls a public hearing on media ownership and diversity. We'll be joined by Michael Copps, former FCC Chair Reed Hunt, the Newspaper Guild's Linda Foley, also, microbroadcasting pioneer Pete Treatish and Mark Crispin Miller.
The Republicans have their way in this thing. All our media, all news and entertainment could one day be dominated by one corporation.
Plus, we'll go live to the FCC hearing. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. First, the headlines. President-elect Bush came out strongly against affirmative action yesterday and college admissions. He said the White House would argue in a brief to the Supreme Court that the University of Michigan gives unconstitutional preference to African-American, Latino, and Native American applicants. Bush charged Michigan's policy was divisive, unfair, and unconstitutional. The Michigan court case is seen as the most important affirmative action case in a generation. We go now to Lee Kokorinos, author of the new book, The Assault on Diversity, an Organized Challenge to Racial and Gender Justice. The significance of this case, Lee.
Good morning, Amy. The first point, of course, is that it really is a watershed case. It seeks to overturn the carefully tailored admissions policies that were adopted at most of the country's top universities after the 1978 Bakke decision, striking down quotas. President Bush has falsely claimed that the university was practicing a quota system, which it is not. He just chose to use the word quotas because it's a political buzzword that excites his right-wing political base. The second point, I think, is that this decision is the product of a very determined campaign by a well-financed group of organizations that have been bringing these cases over the past decade, then surrounding them with dishonest propaganda about so-called reverse discrimination. And Bush has brought a lot of these very same people into the administration with him. Ted Olson, the Solicitor General, who fought hard to get the administration to take this position, also argued the case that ended affirmative action in Texas as a private attorney working with the Center for Individual Rights, which also put together the Michigan case. And it's important for people to find out more about these organizations in order to engage them.
Lee Kokorinos, Research Director of the Institute for Democracy Studies. The Bush administration is seeking to stop Chief UN Weapons Inspector Hans Blix from issuing any more reports on Iraqi disarmament to the Security Council after January. Hans Blix has said he plans to issue a second report in late March. But the Washington Post reports the White House wants a decision on whether to go to war shortly after Blix's scheduled January 27th presentation. And the Los Angeles Times reports to justify a possible war in Iraq, Washington may now focus on what Iraqi President Saddam Hussein left out of his weapons declaration. This change is needed because weapons inspectors have failed to uncover any evidence of Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. The suspected teen sniper John Lee Malveaux will be tried as an adult and face the death penalty. He's been accused of being one half of the pair of the marksmen accused in a string of killings in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. He is 17 years old. UPI is reporting Israel will soon allow its spy agency, the Mossad, to resume assassinations of wanted Palestinians and wherever they are, including the United States. Until now, UPI reports that General Ariel Sharon has limited his policy of targeted killings to the West Bank and Gaza. The news comes a week after Haaretz reported that officials in Belgium are considering reopening a 12-year-old murder investigation. Police say they have new information that Mossad helped orchestrate the killing of a Canadian scientist on Belgian soil. And finally, a federal judge in Atlanta has sentenced a former Drug Enforcement Agency analyst to a year in prison for leaking unclassified information from agency databases and files to a British reporter.
The world in a minute.
Station carries no news of the world.
Corporate America owns all the networks.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message breakup.
Every station is identification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC Disney, NBC GE, Murdoch is Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen, the camera, the sword, buying coke, buying Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
And experience your psychic connection.
We don't have shit to say. We don't have.
You are listening to Democracy Now. I'm Amy Goodman. Imagine a country where one person runs the largest TV network, the largest radio conglomerate, the largest newspaper, and the largest internet company in the country. I'm not talking about Russia or China. I'm talking about here and now in the United States. Right now, the Federal Communications Commission is engaged in what it characterizes as the most comprehensive review of media ownership rules ever undertaken by the FCC. The six rules under review include the ban on broadcasters owning television stations that reach more than 35% of the country, the prohibition of mergers between the four largest TV networks, and the prohibition from owning a newspaper and broadcast outlet in the same market. If those rules are scrapped, a single CEO could theoretically own all of the largest media outlets in the country. The FCC is holding a day-long public forum at Columbia University on this issue today. Most analysts believe it may already be too late to stop that from happening. Driving the review is FCC Chair Michael Powell, son of Secretary of State General Powell. Powell strongly supported the AOL-Time Warner merger. After the merger, his father saw its stock in the company skyrocket from $6 to $10 million. Michael Powell has admitted he doesn't know what public interest means. He's argued that the rise of alternative media sources, such as the Internet, has made many of the rules obsolete and says an overhaul of the rules is long overdue. Powell has the backing of the courts. Last year, a federal appeals court in Washington ordered the FCC to reconsider the 35% limit on station ownership and its rule that prevents a single company from owning more than one television station in a small or media-sized market. The same court has struck down a ban that prevented cable companies from owning TV stations in their markets and threw out limits that prohibited cable companies from controlling more than 30% of U.S. cable systems. There are other powerful forces at play. The corporations pressuring the FCC include AOL Time Warner, which in addition to AOL and Time Magazine owns HBO, CNN, and dozens of magazines, General Electric, Disney, and Viacom, which owns NBC, ABC, CBS, respectively. The odds are frightening, but there is significant opposition. At a Senate hearing earlier this week, the FCC was slammed from all sides. Democratic Senator Byron Dorgan from North Dakota told the five FCC commissioners, "We're heading exactly in the wrong direction in these areas. You need to have your foot on the brake, not your hand on the throttle." Even conservative Republican Trent Lott weighed in, saying he was worried about the deterioration of localism. In addition, one FCC commissioner is so incensed by the direction Michael Powell is taking that he's organizing a public hearing on the issue today in New York City at Columbia University. Powell and the other commissioners initially declined to attend, but in the last few days have bowed to public pressure, and they're there as well. In a minute, we're going to go to that FCC commissioner, Michael Copps. But first, Juan Gonzalez is at the hearing, which is about to begin. Juan is co-host of Democracy Now!, also president of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, and he will be testifying at this forum today. Welcome, Juan.
Good morning, Amy. And, I'm out here outside of the hearing room. It's scheduled to start in a few minutes, and quite a few organizations, both labor, civic, community organizations, and professional organizations are here to speak. And, of course, the fact that Michael Powell and the other commissioners have agreed to participate after only one commissioner initially called for shows that the public pressure has already begun to have an impact in terms of what was, in effect, almost stealth changing of rules that was going into effect. Very similar to the Telecommunications Act in 1996. But now that word is beginning to get out, and civic groups and groups concerned about media accountability are getting involved, the commissioners are being forced now, and even, of course, Congress showing some concern about this move by Michael Powell. You're now getting a lot more accountability, at least. Not sufficient yet, but somewhat more accountability.
The room is filling up, Juan. Do you recognize people there?
So far, No, because I'm right now I'm outside of the room, and because I'm going to be one of the presenters, they had me upstairs in sort of a panelist room, so I have not been able to get inside the auditorium to get a good look at who's here yet. The commissioners haven't arrived, but there are quite a few of the Jeff Chester from the Center for Digital Democracy and Linda Foley, the president of the Newspaper Guild, who I'll be putting on to talk with you soon about some of the labor movement's concerns about what's going on with this issue. I'm actually will be here representing the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. Surprisingly, Columbia Journalism Review, in their latest issue, criticized sharply all of the journalism organizations in the country because none of them virtually have taken a stand on these rules changes, and yet they will be deeply affected by the complete rearranging of the media landscape that will result from some, if not all, of these changes.
Juan, if you would talk more specifically about why the National Association of Hispanic Journalists has weighed in here.
Well, we're concerned about a number of things. One is we're concerned about the process itself. I'm about to say, Michael Powell is taking less time to make the most fundamental revision of media ownership in U.S. history than it would take to have one NBA basketball season. And the public has not been informed adequately or encouraged to participate sufficiently. We all know the immense power that the mass communications media have in American society today, and yet there has been very little public input into this process. This is basically being driven by the Rupert Murdochs and the AOL Time Warners and who want to get even bigger than they are now. You're going to see some of these rules go through, cable companies buying up television networks, newspapers buying up television stations, and even more concentration, if it's possible to conceive of, than exists today.
We're talking to Juan Gonzalez at Columbia Law School, where an FCC forum is about to begin with the five commissioners. It's called by FCC Commissioner Michael Copps, who we're going to go to in a minute. Juan Gonzalez with us. Juan, if you could put Linda Foley on, head of the Newspaper Guild.
This is Linda Foley. She's the president of the Newspaper Guild.
Welcome.
Hello, Amy.
Hi, welcome to Democracy Now! Linda Foley, can you talk about why the Newspaper Guild is at the FCC forum today?
Well, as many of your listeners may know, the Newspaper Guild merged with the Communications Workers of America, and one of the reasons that we merged with the CWA is because of what we call the C word, which is convergence. And as media technology allows different delivery systems to converge and to deliver information in new and exciting ways, we think it's important that we keep the media and the information in the hands of as many diverse entities as we can. And so from our point of view, there are two things as a result that, media, and so their jobs are going to be impacted by what the decisions that the FCC makes. And two is really a public policy concern. We're very concerned that as media systems converge, if media, all the media, are in the hands of just a few people, that not all voices will be heard that should be heard by citizens and consumers, so that they can make choices they need to make in this complex society that we live in. So really, from two points of view, one, from the very parochial, our members, their jobs, and then also from a public policy standpoint, we believe that it's important to be diverse media owners as is possible. And that's where we get the best, that's how we'll get the best democracy.
I understand, Linda Foley, that you're standing next to Florence Rice of the Harlem Consumer Education Council.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you very well.
Is Florence Rice standing next to you
right
now?
Oh, yes, she's standing right here next to me.
Can you put her on the phone, please?
Sure.
We're talking to our guests at the FCC
Hello.
Forum.
Good morning.
Hi, Florence Rice. This is Amy Goodman at Democracy Now! Florence
yes.
Rice is with the Harlem Consumer Education Council. Why are you at the FCC Forum today?
What am I expecting?
Yes. Why are you there representing the Harlem Consumer Education Council?
And the Consumer Federation of America. Because, number one, the corporate world, the broadcasting world, have completely got have dummied down the society so badly that they no longer think for themselves. They shape people's mind. They're able to just buy all the stations. They're all one station, and I think that's what annoys many of us because we're hearing. And this is what I'd like to say. It's about time the commission held a hearing here in New York, and particularly appropriate that you have come up to Harlem to get a real worldwide view of media ownership. The commission needs to begin to understand that the black and Hispanics of this community, what all people of color have known for a long, long time. Black faces do not appear and black voices are not heard in the media in proportion to their numbers. When they get into the media, a true picture of their life and interests is not presented. Blacks and Hispanics are always portrayed as criminals. That's why I have son-in-law day to just honor black and Hispanic men. Problems are distorted and manipulated for political purposes. Effective solutions are not presented. And that's really the purpose that I'm here and I'm deeply, many of us, not only myself, many of us are deeply concerned how we're portrayed on television and how the journalists today shape the minds of minority people. I'll say black, African Americans and Hispanic. So that's my concern. And not only my concern, many concerns.
Florence Rice speaking to us from the FCC Forum that is about to take place. We will be going there live at Columbia Law School. You are listening to Democracy Now! Joining us in our studio is a micro-broadcasting pioneer, Petri Dish, as well as Mark Crispin Miller, who is a professor at New York University. Mark Crispin Miller, the issue of media consolidation, what's at stake today in this, I am saying hearing, but in fact it is not an official FCC hearing.
No, it isn't. It's actually a kind of PR response to a big fuss that Michael Copps kicked up. He deserves our kudos for doing this, for being a kind of one-man army of resistance against this juggernaut that wants to eliminate all remaining regulations. Not that there are that many. Now, people should understand that this, the abyss we're staring into, is one that we've always been approaching from the time that American broadcasting was established as a commercial system. This is in 1934. From that point on, there have been regulation after regulation pulled away. The broadcast code has gotten simpler and simpler. The parent corporations have been given more and more permission to merge, and the system has become more and more opaque. It's been harder and harder for people to democratically participate in, say, hearings that stations have to undergo to renew their licenses. The whole operation has become a stealth operation, an inside the beltway operation. And the aim of it has been basically to extract as much profit as possible from the media, which is a complete violation of the First Amendment imperative. The media is supposed to be here for our First Amendment rights. We have the right to be informed. In fact, we have the obligation to be informed. When all the news and entertainment that we get is dominated by the likes of GE and Rupert Murdoch, we get a highly censored, very monotonous picture. They cater far more to their advertisers than they do to their audiences. Localism disappears, And I think at the moment, now that we're in the war on terrorism, most frightening is the fact that this huge megalith, this big, big, monstrous corporate entity, gets very close to the government and ends up functioning as a kind of propaganda echo chamber for the White House. I could give you countless examples just from the last week of ways in which CNN, Time, ABC have basically done big favors to the Bush administration by censoring this, not putting that up on a website. This is a sign of kind of collusion that doesn't belong in the American system as the founders imagined it.
Pete Tredish, you have been dealing with the FCC for a long time, focusing on low power issues, low power FM, to try to get more local community radio stations and communities around the country. What do you think brought on this forum and the intense interest at this point? I should say, not the forum, Michael Copps, the dissident, doing this is not as unusual as the fact that all the other commissioners are there.
Well, what happened was that there was a groundswell of participation in the rulemaking process. And this is something that we learned in the Low Power campaign, was that there's this obscure rulemaking process that's mostly just used by lawyers and inside the Beltway interests. You get a lot of comments from the industry and from Senate and so forth, but mostly the public doesn't participate in the rulemaking process.
We
at
have
the
to
FCC.
Go to break in 60 seconds.
But what happened was that in Low Power, we sort of jumped into the middle of this process and actually brought the public into the public process of rulemaking. And so while most proceedings have 50 comments, 60 comments, we brought 3,200 comments in the low power proceeding and actually made a big, big impact on how it happened. And we tried this again by making it easy for the public to comment on this website, and we ended up with about 1,800 comments coming into the FCC on this proceeding.
Well, we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to go to dissident FCC Commissioner Michael Copps. Stay with us.
And you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Following Democracy Now! Today, we will continue with the FCC hearings here in New York on WBAI, your Pacifica radio station. So please stay with us.
We bring the truth to places truth has never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base, deep down, no precision. High crime treason, we broadcast in sedition. Like the Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition. Commandeering airwaves from unknown positions. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded. With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and supported. Ha ha.
Mike and my
don't take no prisoners if you can't afford to feed none. Don't start no fights if you cannot predict the outcome. Don't make
you are listening to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn now to an interview I did with the dissident FCC Commissioner Michael Copps last night as he came into New York talking about the significance of today's forum.
At stake is the whole future of the media in this country, radio, television, cable, the Internet, what kind of programming the American people see, their entertainment, their information, political dialogue.
And what do you think the majority opinion on the commission is at this point among the five commissioners?
Well, I would hope there is not a majority opinion right now, because I don't think we have nearly enough in the way of data and analysis to make an informed judgment about where we should be going. First of all, we have to find out where we are. That's always where you should start an analysis like this and a discipline like this. That's what we're trying to do up here in New York at the hearing. That's what I will be trying to do in hearings around the country. We do not have the data to justify changing these rules.
Can you talk about the hearings that were held in the Senate yesterday?
Well, they were very interesting. They were held to discuss telecommunications, but I would say roughly maybe 40%, maybe more than that, devolved into a discussion of media consolidation. And it was a fascinating discussion because concern about excessive media came from both sides of the aisle, from the Republican side and from the Democratic side. It sent a powerful message to me, and I think it should send a powerful message to anybody interested in this issue.
The SEC chair, Michael Powell, said that he was not interested in relaxing the rules, but that seemed to fly against what he has said or indicated in the past.
Well, maybe there's some evolution. I hope if there's been some that there'll be some more, too, until we get to a decision on this. I think there has been widespread expression of concern. I think it's beginning to grow. It's going to become even more widespread in the weeks and months ahead.
Can you talk about what's happened in the past, say, since 1996 with the Telecommunications Act? What kind of consolidation is happening and what is threatened to happen in the future?
Well, we know in the radio industry, this is the one model we can really look at and make some judgments on, that there has been tremendous consolidation. We know that today there are 34% fewer radio station owners in the United States of America than there were in 1996. The largest station back in 1996, largest company owned, I think, 85 stations. Now the largest company owns over 1,200 stations. And I've heard some experts say that that could go to 3 or 4 or maybe even 5,000. So the landscape has changed. And I'm very sensitive to the suggestions that have been made by people who know a lot about the media that this has had some unfortunate effects from the standpoint of the homogenization of programming, from the standpoint of stifling creativity in the arts, from the standpoint of local artists not being able to get their music played on program stations that are programmed out of an advertising agency in New York City rather than out of a local station, that it's maybe had a debilitating effect on the public dialogue and the public discourse in this country by stifling diversity, by stifling localism. So what's at stake really goes to the root of what this country is all about. It's enormously important.
Can you talk about what kind of response the FCC has had? I mean, until now, there has been discussion of just one public hearing in Richmond, Virginia.
Well, that's all I've heard. As of today, we have the one public hearing that's going to be held, but there are going to be more because I'm going to hold additional hearings. Now, they don't give me a budget to do that, but I'm going to find a way to do it. If I have to do it on a shoestring, I'll do it on a shoestring. But this is not an inside the Beltway issue, and it shouldn't be. And I know the chairman and others have said we already have 12 or 13 or 1,500 comments in, and that's well and good. But those are, by and large, from people who know where the commission is and know about this item, that have the lawyers who can fill out the proper comments and petitions and everything else to the commission. I want to take this to the heart of America, to mainstream America. I want to go into local media markets and find out what's the level of diversity now compared to 1996, compared to 1986, compared to 1976. And it's not anecdotal information I'm looking at, although that can be important and useful. But I'm looking, by going out into these areas, to tapping into expertise that we normally don't have access to. And it's that important an issue, because it affects us all, that we ought to be making that extra effort. You're talking about something here that's worth billions and probably tens of billions of dollars to the companies and the broadcasters. And we can't find $50,000 or $100,000 to go out and do hearings on this? I mean, it's mind-boggling. It's also ridiculous.
We're talking to Michael Copps, one of the FCC commissioners, the commissioner who has called for this public forum at Columbia University. Now the other commissioners have come on board. What was the evolution of that? For a while, you were the only one coming.
You'd have to talk to them. I just would hope that they have seen the seriousness of the issue. They've heard me talking about it. They've heard other people talking about it. They've seen the issue start to be teed up, and I like to think that they have open minds on this issue, and when they go to a hearing like they did yesterday and hear these expressions of concern across the political gamut, I think that's got to make an impression on anybody. But I think they are increasingly interested, and I think if I go out and have hearings of my own, then I'll be joined by other commissioners doing that.
The networks, Fox, NBC, Viacom, CBS, have filed in the last day of public comment period saying throw out all the rules. What's your response to that?
My response when anybody comes into my office with a suggestion for changing a rule is, how does that serve the public interest? How does that serve the average consumer in the United States? So I would like them to come in and tell me how getting rid of all of these rules, getting rid of the discipline that Congress initiated in the telecommunications legislation and told us to be mindful of consolidation, how suddenly getting rid of that is going to serve the public interest in terms of localism, diversity, the kinds of entertainment people get. I'd have a lot of questions for them if they did come.
What difference does media coverage of this issue make, media coverage of media consolidation? You're talking about some of the biggest transformation in history when it comes to media consolidation, and yet we've seen almost no reports of this on television.
It makes all the difference in the world. If I'm going to be successful in teeing this up and in sparking a national dialogue, it's going to take the media to do it. And it's kind of ironic that we're going to have to depend on some of the companies who have a vested interest in the outcome of some of these deliberations to help tee that debate up. But it is their public interest responsibility to do that. They cannot, in my mind, shirk that responsibility. So I've gone around and talked to everybody I can, no matter what side of the issue they may be on, saying, I don't care what side of the issue you're on. This is important to every American. You've got to tee it up. When we had our meeting last September, I think, and announced that we were going to be doing this proceeding, I'm told that only one of the networks even mentioned the fact that the FCC had initiated this proceeding to loosen or eliminate all of the ownership caps. One network, and that one network mentioned it at 4:45 in the morning, one time. That is not the kind of dialogue we need to have. It's something that goes to the heart of what the people listen to, hear, and see day in, day out, what their children see and hear. And this, the importance of this vote is not for this year or next year. It's going to go on and on and on. Suppose that we vote in April or May, as Chairman Powell says, we are going to vote on all of these. And suppose, just for the sake of argument, let's say if I'm right or wrong, just suppose for the sake of argument that we make a mistake. Then the question is, how do you put the genie back in the bottle? And the answer is that you can't at that point, because there will be a wave of consolidation that will make anything we've been through before pale by comparison. And how do you undo that? You won't. So let's get our facts. Let's get our data. Let's understand what the implications of this is going to be in the American people. And the more of the comments I look at that come into the FCC and the more data that come in, the more I'm concerned. The more I realize that not only do we not have all the answers, we haven't really asked all of the questions. Nobody has teed up. You know, people are running around and saying, well, you know, we never intended to scrap all of these rules. But we haven't teed up for expert analysis on what happens if you raise one of these caps by 20 or 30 or 40%. Shouldn't we know that before we go into something like this? We haven't looked at the nexus between vertical integration and horizontal integration. You know, we did away with all of the rules about 8 or 9 years ago on financial syndication and all of that, the ability to control programming. And those were done away with on the basis that we still had some horizontal controls on monopoly and consolidation. Now we're talking about doing away or loosening those up. So let's explore that nexus a little bit. What about advertising? What's it going to mean for the ability of the mom-and-pop restaurant or the hardware store to advertise their place on local media? Importantly, what does it mean for diversity groups in this country? How are they going to be served? What is consolidation going to do for the kinds of programming that various diversity groups are going to be interested in and for covering the issues that they're interested in? So you can see, you know, I get... Some people think I get a little bit carried away with this issue, but I think it really goes to the basics of our country.
FCC Chair Powell has said there's no concern, no need to be concerned about media consolidation because the Justice Department, the Antitrust Division, can deal with any concerns about monopoly.
We are under, at the Federal Communications Commission, the injunction to do public interest analysis on all of these mergers and combinations. And obviously we take into our review the opinions of the Justice Department on the legalities of antitrust. But we're looking at something in addition to that, and something in my mind that is fundamentally and geometrically more important when you talk about the public interest.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I hope that everybody who has an interest in this will really be talk about it to their neighbors. I hope that everybody who comes to this forum at Columbia University tomorrow will go back home determined to raise the issue in their local media, papers, and on television and talk about it. Because I'm convinced that when the American people find out that this issue is up for decision, that they are going to be interested. And, you know, a lot of them don't even realize, because nobody's told them, that the public owns the airwaves. This isn't infringing on somebody's property rights that we're talking about. This is how do you make use of the publicly owned airwaves to advance the interest of the American people.
Explain what you mean by the public owns the airwaves and not the corporations that use them.
Well, the airwaves are a public spectrum. Nobody owns them. Companies can lease, get a license to use them, and that license is predicated upon their serving the public interest. And that means fostering a deliberative democracy. It means abiding by some of the rules and regulations that we have on children's programming. It means a whole variety of different things. But that's bedrock to broadcasting. What they have is a privilege to broadcast. And, you know, to those, I think it was Franklin Roosevelt who said that, to those whom much is given, much is expected. And that would be my message to broadcasters and cable folks and everybody else that's involved in the media.
And that was FCC Commissioner Michael Copps. He is the reason that this forum is being held in New York today at Columbia Law School, which we will be going to in just a minute live. But we're joined on the telephone right now by the president of AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you very much, Amy. I'm glad to be on board.
John Connolly, can you tell us why AFTRA is weighing in the FCC forum today?
Well, actually, this development is extraordinary and very exciting. We originally saw this FCC, quote, review, unquote, of ownership regulations as basically a deregulation steamroller, and a story that was just not being told or reported and indeed possibly suppressed. But we figured that even if we fight on this issue and we lose, which we thought was likely, we had to make a fight of it. My motto going into this was the law says the airwaves belong to the American people and AFTRA says it's time that they took them back. We see the fight against deregulation and the concentration of media corporate power, not just as working people in the media industries, but also as citizens in the United States. We think that the over-concentration of media power clearly is a threat to diversity of voices and American democracy. And oddly enough, what we think we started as kind of a Don Quixote quest seems to have captured the attention of at least a segment of the American people and maybe even the imagination of the working press and the media. There's an awful lot of activist organizations and coalitions now working on this issue. And we thought that perhaps at one time the FCC was going to bull right through and make all the decisions before Christmas of 2002. But as we began building a series of coalitions of media industry unions, community groups, civil rights organizations like the Media Access Project, we saw that we are actually beginning to affect...
John Connolly, we have to cut you off because Michael Powell has just taken the microphone at the FCC forum, and we're going to go to that live right now. John Connolly is the AFTRA president.
For opportunity to thank Professor Ginsberg for organizing an outstanding event on particularly short notice. I would be the first to agree that this kind of public discourse is one of the most critical things that the Commission can participate in, an opportunity to hear a wide-ranging set of views. I want to apologize in advance. Regrettably, I also have to participate today in a Rainbow Push Wall Street project later in the day, so I won't be able to be here all day. But I have ensured that the chief of our media bureau, Ken Faree, and the individual who is leading up the Media Ownership Rules Task Force, Paul Gallant, will be here all day, and we will be able to hear a full report on today's activities. I want to take an opportunity to, first of all, talk about what really is facing the FCC. This is a difficult issue, one of filled with emotion, filled with strong and genuinely held viewpoints, but it's important to stay focused for the purposes of the Commission on what stands before it. Why do I think that's important?
It's interesting to see this rulemaking as a once-in-a-lifetime seminal event in the history of broadcast regulation. I would submit the reason it's difficult is because it's become a routine event. That is, Congress has established in the statute that the commission has no discretion but to review its rules every 2 years, no matter how regrettable that provision would be. And I would submit publicly I find it somewhat regrettable. I think it's destabilizing to have to necessarily look at rules at such regular intervals. But we must do that every 2 years. So even when we finish this proceeding, we're going to have to start looking again very quickly at the next proceeding. And so what does that mean as a legal matter about what our challenge really is? Our challenge is we need to begin to develop the process and the foundation and the metrics that we will use as an institution, as in a community, to evaluate the viability of ownership rules on a regular basis in perpetuity, to be able to have those metrics every 2 years and apply them to the rules in order to justify new rules or eliminate existing rules to follow that framework. The biennial review has been conducted only once previously. Chairman Kennard conducted the first biennial review in the last commission, and he, faced with the challenge of the statute, established the standards that we believed were correct, the presumptions of the statute, and the methods we go about looking at the rules. Regrettably, those rules were reviewed in court. We first had the view that a biennial wasn't reviewable in court. The court concluded that it was. And the court established, in overturning a great deal of what we had done, some very rigorous parameters that have made our task particularly difficult. What are those parameters that we have to stay focused on? First and foremost, the court said, we don't have any discretion. You will review the rules. You can't choose to ignore a rule and put it off to another day. That's burden one on the commission. The second thing, contrary to the commission's view, the court said, and by the way, you, FCC, bear the burden of proving that a rule has the benefits you purport that it does, or the statute requires you eliminate it. That is, the congressional presumption, whatever your view may be of it, dictates that the rule falls unless otherwise justified. And the court said, and we expect to see much more empirical and rigorous evidence in the justification of such rules, and not just simply the act of faith accolades that you asserted in many of the contexts of the defenses in the first round. And what the court did perhaps more dangerously is say, and if you, commission, fail to do that, we will eliminate the rules. And for good measure, in case we didn't hear them in the biennial, they in fact eliminated some rules that the commission had not addressed the benefits of. So what are we doing here? What is the commission doing here? We're trying to take the parameters that the court established, the pressures given to us under the statute, and come up with a schematic that will allow me and everyone who succeeds me and my colleagues to use in a manner that can defend the rules that are necessary, institute new rules if necessary, or justify the elimination of rules if that is necessary. The court insisted on data, empirical evidence. One of the things that we've done in this proceeding is make an attempt for the first time to do that. We have commissioned over 12 empirical studies by academics, professors, some done within the commission. It is an effort to develop an empirical record that will give us facts about the media marketplace, not anecdotes, not emotional assertions on one side of the divide or the other, but the kind of empirical evidence that the court has said you better show up with next time if you hope to defend a rule. Now, let me say, the studies are subject to evaluation, critique, and disregard if you choose. That's what studies are for. They're available on our website, and I would encourage everyone to look at them. But remember, studies and data and empirical evidence are going to be required to defend the keeping of any one rule or the creation of any new rule. So if they're not any good, or you have issues with them, we must find a way to supplement them with something, or the community must offer something in order to justify the continuance of any rule that one would insist should stay. That's our task. What I have been disappointed in sometimes in the course of debate is this doesn't focus too often or often enough on what those metrics are. How do you look at the marketplace? What kind of voices should count? How much concentration has there really been rather than the assumption that they've been in what markets and in what manner? Because if we don't have that, we don't have a media ownership rule foundation. I'll give it to you right now. Everyone in this room, I'm sure, concedes and stipulates that media diversity, viewpoint diversity, are some of the most important cherished values in our American system. We can talk about that all day. I agree with you. That alone is not going to justify the rules before the court. I would agree that if this is done wrong, it could have significant consequences for American discourse and democracy. I would also submit if it isn't done right, the courts will eliminate the rules anyway. We'll suffer the consequences just as sincerely, just as badly. So focusing on what should you suggest to the commission to be its foundation, its metrics, its focus, its consideration in determining what rules to keep and what rules not to keep. That's really what we're doing. So we can talk about media concentration, as we should. We can robustly talk about the quality of content in America, which we should. But at the end of the day, it's going to be that those metrics and that foundation that will be applied by this commission and future commissions in determining what the rules should be. Let me begin to sum up with at least one statement that I hope puts you at ease. I read a lot of headlines about what we're doing. I have strained to read one that's accurate yet. But I'll tell you this, there are going to be rules when this proceeding is over. We're debating about which ones and in what form and how they will be defended or justified. That's the exercise. But there are going to be rules when this is done. There's not going to be a rule that lets one person own everything. I'd leave you with one caution. I've been at the FCC for over 5.5 years. I've seen very critical issues that embody an enormous amount of passion that I have personally participated in. And I have seen sometimes with great regret that in our zeal to defend the objectives of rules, we push too hard. We overstate. And the consequences are worse than if we had been taken a more moderate and thoughtful course. What are the examples? I watched for years as we tried to justify equal employment opportunity rules in order to ensure that minorities and women had opportunities in broadcast properties. I watched them get struck down once, and the court offered guidance on what to do. I watched the commission turn around and try to re-justify them, and even in the context of the law, in my opinion, insisted on once again pushing a little too hard, a little too unfaithfully to what the parameters of the judiciary said. They were struck down a second time as unconstitutional. And by the way, for the scholars in the room, what does that mean? That's not just meaning an effect on broadcasting. Those unconstitutional rulings affect affirmative action and outreach in any area involving race and minority women in the country. So not only is the law we're producing damaging to the broadcast ownership rules, it's damaging to values all across the country. A week after those rules were overturned, I said we're going to do them again. And we're going to do them in a way that we truly believe will be sustained. And we've done that, and I am hopeful and confident they will be sustained, if they're even challenged, which they've yet to be. I've seen people push on the public interest standard. Video description rules for the disabled. I thought it was one of the most noble causes that the commission ever wanted to focus on, except it wasn't in the law. We chose to not care and push it anyway. Predictably, the rulings overturned by the courts. Unpredicted and more dangerous, the court added to the law and says, you can't use that authority anymore for content-based regulation, period. That's an unintended consequence of pushing a bad position. We're in a law school. When I was here, I was taught bad cases make bad law. If we don't have the facts, we don't have the record, we don't have the faithfulness to the provisions that we're asked to use, we're not only going to not get what we're trying to achieve, we run the risk of making it worse. I am happy to be here because I think this is a community interested in finding that answer. We're interested in being your partners in finding that answer. And I do think it's one of the most important things we've ever done. But it's going to be something we're going to have to do over and over and over again. So I wish you a great and productive day. More importantly, I wish that something that emerges out of here gives us the tangible specifics that we need to do the job that's actually before us and justify a sound and defensible media regulatory regime. Thank you.
You've just been listening to Michael Powell, the chair of the Federal Communications Commission. Next up is Michael Copps. He is the commissioner who brought this FCC forum to Columbia Law School.
This is the ranking Democratic member, one of two Democrats.
You're listening to Democracy Now! This is Michael Copps.
Associated with putting this event today, thank you all for coming to participate in what I think may well be the most important meeting taking place anywhere in America today. And I do not say that lightly. Certainly no issue before the Federal Communications Commission is so important as the decision on whether to eliminate or significantly change our media concentration protections. At stake is how this industry is going to look in the next generation and beyond. At stake are core values of localism, diversity, and maintaining the marketplace of ideas that undergirds our system of American democracy, multiplicity of voices and choices. And at stake is the quality and type of entertainment available to all of us. So this is important, really important work that you are doing today. And I am frankly concerned, as most of you already know, about consolidation in the media, and particularly concerned that we are on the verge of dramatically altering our nation's media landscape without the kind of debate and analysis that these issues so clearly merit. I respectfully disagree that this is so routine an exercise, because I think this particular biennial review is a watershed biennial review. And while we will do it again in a couple of years under the review and under the statute, I think this is going to set the direction for quite some time to come. And I think if we do significantly change those rules in this review, they won't be easily undone if we make a mistake 2 years hence. Why am I concerned? I'm concerned because I don't believe we have the foggiest idea right now about the potential consequences of our actions. We have a model to look at for what eliminating concentration protections might do to the media in the radio industry. And many believe that the elimination of radio consolidation rules has created serious problems. We'll hear more about this from today's panels. Undoubtedly, some efficiencies were created that allowed broadcast media companies to operate more profitably, maybe kept some stations from going dark. But the consolidation went, I think, far beyond what anybody expected. Conglomerates now own dozens, even hundreds, and in one case, more than 1,000 stations all across the country. More and more programming originates hundreds of miles away from listeners and from their communities. And there are 34% fewer radio station owners today than there were before safeguards were eliminated. The majority of markets today are dominated by oligopoly, and all this in only a few years after 1996. Media watchers like the Media Access Project, Consumers Union, Professor Robert McChesney argue that this concentration has led to far less coverage of news and public interest programming. The Future of Music Coalition, in its multi-year study, finds a homogenization of music that gets fair play, airplay, and that radio serves now more to advertise the products of vertically integrated conglomerates than to entertain Americans with the best and most original and enlightening programming. Despite this history, the Commission will vote this spring on whether to visit upon the rest of broadcast media, that which has already been visited upon radio, and perhaps much, much more. Before we make decisions about eliminating or substantially changing the protections that remain for television, cable, and newspapers, we need to understand the current media landscape and the implications of eliminating concentration protections. I brought along with me this morning a few charts that I think are very interesting. We compile them with information that has come into the commission during our consideration of the ownership issues, and they provide, I think, some potentially valuable points of reference as we begin our search for answers. Come up and take a look at them while you're here, because we need your help in analyzing precisely what it is that they mean. Chart number one. The fact that this one is so hard to see from the back of the room shows just how much is owned by few companies. Five companies control vast numbers of TV and radio stations, cable networks, newspapers, magazines, book publishers, music, concert promoters, the top websites. Now, some people argue that new forms of media and new technologies like cable and the Internet are going to protect us from consolidation. But who's protecting them? The second chart shows that 90% of the top 50 cable channels are controlled by the same corporations that own the TV networks and the cable providers. And only five of those channels are not owned by these companies. You know, once cable was the new kid on the block with independent programming, that role is now in question. But still, there's the Internet. Isn't that going to save us? But I think the Internet is starting to show some signs of concentration as well. Nielsen rated the top 20 news websites. This chart shows that the owners of these sites look very familiar. Most of these sites are controlled by the same companies that we get our TV and newspaper-based news from. Is the Internet really giving us new voices, or just recycling existing ones? Do New Yorkers really read the LA Times in great numbers on the Internet, or do they just look at MSNBC in another form? This information does not provide us with answers, does not give us solutions, nor do I offer it in that vein. But it sure raises a lot of questions. And in fact, the more information that comes into the FCC during this proceeding, the more convinced I am that not only have we not provided all the answers, we're just realizing how many more questions there are that we haven't even begun to ask yet. And I wager that today you will raise dozens more. Here's just a few questions that our studies don't answer. We're being told now not to worry. We're not going to scrap all these rules, and that's good. Maybe some, but not all. But where is the analysis of, say, what happens if we lift the television cap 20 or 30 or 50% instead of scrapping it? Shouldn't we know that before we set sail? What is the likely prospective effect on localism, diversity, and independence if we eliminate this and other protections, especially given our history with radio consolidation? How much news and public affairs programming was broadcast in the years immediately before and after elimination of FCC radio concentration rules? What effects have recent media mergers, radio consolidation, and TV duopolies had on the personnel and resources devoted to news and public affairs and public service programming, and on the output of such programming? Do newspapers and co-owned broadcast stations carry similar viewpoints more frequently than independent newspapers and broadcast stations? We have one study on that, but it's been called into question. I think our research cannot be deemed completed there. How do consolidation and co-ownership affect the media's focus on issues important to minorities and to the objective of diversity, diversity in programming, diversity of ownership? And how about the impact of consolidation on advertising? Our mom and pop.
You've been listening to Michael Copps, FCC Commissioner. We will bring you more of this programming tomorrow. Pacifica is running the FCC Forum live all day today, and stations can tune in to the Pacifica KU satellite, the right channel for that. Democracy Now! Is produced by Chris Abrams, Mike Burke, Angie Karen, Anna Noguera, Alex Wolf. Thanks to Dennis Moynihan. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. I'm Amy Goodman. Juan Gonzalez is at the FCC Forum. Thanks for listening to another edition of Democracy Now!
And this is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. And as Amy just mentioned, that we will be going to Pacifica for the hear-ins. And we'll be doing that in a second, where we will pick up. Just want to tell you that coming up tonight at 7 p.m., Education in the Crossroads, and I take it they'll be taking a look at the restructuring of the New York City Board of Education. Where We Live at 8 with Sally O'Brien and the Lambe Brat, looking at the anniversary of the death of Laurent Kabila on Africa Kaleidoscope. So please stay with us right here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York as we join the hearings that are taking place in the Pacifica National Broadcast from Columbia University.
Solicited. So is the input of consumers and labor and educational and religious and minority organizations and Americans who have never even heard of the FCC. You know, we can pretend that these folks read the Federal Register and can afford the lawyers to participate fully in an inside-the-beltway decision-making, but we'd be kidding ourselves. This decision is too important to make in a business-as-usual way.